Chapter 12. The next morning, my maid brought me a hurried note written in pencil by my brother. It contained only a few lines, saying that he found that his continued sojourn at Royston was not beneficial to his health, and had determined to return to Italy. If we wished to write, letters would reach him at the Villa De Angelis. His valet, Parnham, was to follow him thither with his baggage as soon as it could be got together. This was all. There was no word of adieu even to his wife. We found that he had never gone to bed that night, but in the early morning he had himself saddled his horse Sentinel and ridden in to Derby, taking the early mail thence to London. His resolve to leave Royston had apparently been arrived at very suddenly, for so far as we could discover he had carried no luggage of any kind. I could not help looking somewhat carefully round his room to see if he had taken the Stradivarius violin. No trace of it, or even of its case, was to be seen, though it was difficult to imagine how he could have carried it with him on horseback. There was, indeed, a locked travelling trunk which Parnham was to bring with him later, and the instrument might, of course, have been in that, but I felt convinced that he had actually taken it with him in some way or other, and this proved afterwards to have been the case. I shall draw a veil, my dear Edward, over the events which immediately followed your father's departure. Even at this distance of time, the memory is too inexpressibly bitter to allow me to do more than briefly allude to them. A fortnight after John's departure, we left Royston and removed to Worth, wishing to get some sea air and to enjoy the last summer of the south coast. Your mother seemed entirely to have recovered from her confinement, and to be enjoying as good health as could be reasonably expected under the circumstances of her husband's indisposition. But suddenly, one of those insidious maladies which are incidental to women in her condition seized upon her. We had hoped and believed that all such period of danger was already happily past. But alas, it was not so, and within a few hours of her first seizure all realized how serious was her case. Everything that human skill can do under such conditions was done, but without avail. Symptoms of blood poisoning showed themselves, accompanied with high fever, and within a week she was in her coffin. Though her delirium was terrible to watch, yet I thank God to this day that if she was to die, it pleased him to take her while in an unconscious condition. For 2 days before her death she recognized no one, and was spared at least the sadness of passing from life without one word of kindness or even of reconciliation from her unhappy husband. The communication with a place so distant as Naples was not then to be made under 15 or 20 days, and all was over before we could hope that the intelligence even of his wife's illness had reached John. Both Mrs. Temple and I remained at Worth in a state of complete prostration, awaiting his return. When more than a month had passed without his arrival, or even a letter to say that he was on his way, our anxiety took a new turn, as we feared that some accident had befallen him, or that the news of his wife's death, which would then be in his hands, had so seriously affected him as to render him incapable of taking any action. To repeated subsequent communications, we received no answer. But at last, to a letter which I wrote to Parnham, the servant replied, stating that his master was still at the Villa De Angelis, and in a condition of health little differing from that in which he left Royston, except that he was now slightly paler, if possible, and thinner. It was not till the end of November that any word came from him, and then he wrote only one page of a sheet of notepaper to me in pencil, making no reference whatever to his wife's death, but saying that he should not return for Christmas, and instructing me to draw on his bankers for any monies that I might require for household purposes at Worth. I need not tell you the effect that such conduct produced on Mrs. Temple and myself. You can easily imagine what would have been your own feelings in such a case. Nor will I relate any other circumstances which occurred at this period, as they would have no direct bearing upon my narrative. Though I still wrote to my brother at frequent intervals, as, not wishing to neglect a duty, no word from him ever came in reply. About the end of March, indeed, Parnham returned to Worth Maltravers, saying that his master had paid him a half year's wages in advance, and then dispensed with his services. He had always been an excellent servant, and attached to the family, and I was glad to be able to offer him a suitable position with us at Worth until his master should return. He brought disquieting reports of John's health, saying that he was growing visibly weaker. Though I was sorely tempted to ask him many questions as to his master's habits and way of life, my pride forbade me to do so. But I heard incidentally from my maid that Parnham had told her Sir John was spending money freely in alterations at the Villa de Angelis, and had engaged Italians to attend him, with which his English valet was naturally much dissatisfied. So the spring passed, and the summer was well advanced. On the last morning of July, I found waiting for me on the breakfast table an envelope addressed in my brother's hand. I opened it hastily. It only contained a few words, which I have before me as I write now. The ink is a little faded and yellow, but the impression it made is yet vivid as on that summer morning. "My dearest Sophie," it began, "come to me here at once, if possible, or it may be too late. I want to see you. They say that I am ill and too weak to travel to England. Your loving brother, John." There was a great change in the style from the cold and conventional notes that he had hitherto sent at such long intervals, from the stiff, "Dear Sophia," and "Sincerely yours," to which, I grieve to say, I had grown accustomed. Even the writing itself was altered. It was more the bold, boyish hand he wrote when first he went to Oxford than the smaller, cramped, and classic character of his later years. Though it was a little matter enough, God knows, in comparison with his grievous conduct, yet it touched me much that he should use again the once familiar "Dearest Sophie," and sign himself "My loving brother." I felt my heart go out towards him, and so strong is woman's affection for her own kin that I had already forgotten any resentment and reprobation in my great pity for the poor wanderer, lying sick, perhaps, unto death and alone in a foreign land. I took his note at once to Mrs. Temple. She read it twice or thrice, trying to take in the meaning of it. Then she drew me to her and, kissing me, said, "Go to him at once, Sophie. Bring him back to Worth. Try to bring him back to the right way.